Too many people are learning misconceptions about sexual assault through TV shows. That's according to members of Normal Police Department's investigative unit. GLT's Mary Collins speaks with Lieutenant Paul Smith and Detective Nicole Bruno about how sexual assault allegations play out in the courtroom. Bruno says the public views sex crimes as different from crimes, from victims of other crimes, and it's not in a good way.
You would never question the victim of a burglary or a robbery about what they were reporting, but it seems like what we've seen, or what I've seen through some of the cases that I've investigated, is that seems to be how those are viewed from the public. So they look at it as putting, you know, the victim on trial, or questioning the actions that the victim did, or saying that it didn't happen that way, whereas we don't see that rarely, if ever, in any other type of offense. So throughout investigating some of these and some of the outcomes at trial for the ones that went to trial, it was very concerning, you know, for us to notice that this was happening. And then even with law enforcement, the training that we've gotten on this topic has increased dramatically throughout the years, which is a good thing. Unfortunately, the public sometimes gets their education from TV shows where it's the stranger in the bush or a very violent situation like that, where it's more than likely somebody that the victim knows. You know, it could involve substances, intoxication. So I think really the reason, you know, we see the need to educate the public is because the public is who's going to make up our juries. So they're going to be the decision makers when they see cases like this. So it's important to educate them on the reality of what these cases look like. And then also, in turn, obviously educate law enforcement, too, as we're the ones that are investigating it.
Right. So how do you see ways of educating?
You know, I think a lot of times education, especially nowadays, a lot of it is social media, public service announcements, and really just reaching out to your peer groups and having a discussion and starting a discussion on it is how we educate. You know, we don't obviously suggest you get your education from CSI when it comes to something like this, but actually coming to professionals who work in the field who have the direct knowledge would be better education for something like this.
To add to what Detective Bruno just said, I think that while we can certainly do education at the college level, sororities, fraternities, general public, we also have to start even younger than that. We are frankly seeing cases involving people in school, high schools. I think that if we start at that level, really reinforcing what we expect when those kids leave high school, move on to the military, move on to college, that we can then expect that they'll perform that way, and or that they've at least been trained and they understand the differences. It's not lost on me that you take that same age group and some kids go off to college and some go to the military, and we have problems in both of those environments with consent. So, you know, where do we go and how young do we go, I think, is a national conversation right now of, you know, do we train these kids in high school, junior high, so that they grow up with it and it becomes ingrained in them long before they ever see the first day at college or boot camp?
That's a really interesting strategy, is, you know, teaching the youth so that as generations progress, it becomes hopefully less and less of a problem. The other side of that is trying to focus on teaching those older generations who are more likely to be in a jury.
Absolutely. There's no doubt right now that you are going to see a very low representation of, you know, say 18 to 26 year olds sitting a jury for many different reasons. They're in college, they're in the military, they're away, their names haven't made it into the database. Frankly, attorneys won't pick them out of that peer group. They'll pick more senior folks, people that are older, better educated, more life experiences. So we have to do both. I think, to your point, we need to start so that change starts happening at the younger ages. But we also have to figure out how to reach our juries that are currently seated and those that are being selected right now, so that they have something else to bounce against the TV show or the detective story that they see on TV, that they know this is real and that it happens, you know, here in Bloomington Normal or Central Illinois in our community.
We've talked a lot about these narratives that people see play out on TV shows and maybe in books or stories that they read. And maybe let's focus on some of those misconceptions that people might have about sexual assault. For one, the idea that if you knew the person beforehand, there's no way it can be sexual assault. If you're in a relationship with that person, there's no way it could be sexual assault. If you're married, you don't get raped by your husband or your wife. So can we address some of those misconceptions and how we work to educate the public to see that those aren't always true?
Yeah, I would say just educating them on what is sexual assault versus focusing on what it's not, which would be the misconceptions. To change somebody's perspective, I think, is sometimes very difficult on something, especially a topic like this. But we've heard everything from, well, if they were flirting at the bar beforehand, then it wasn't a sexual assault. Well, it turned into a sexual assault the minute there was no consent. So it doesn't matter what happened before that or what the actions were before. We need to specifically focus on what actually happened in the actual assault part of it, which is when consent went out the door. So I think, you know, again, just having conversations about what misconceptions there are and kind of looking deeper, I guess, why we're having these misconceptions, like where are they coming from? And I've noticed in some of the cases that I've worked, some of them are coming from the victim's friends and family. You know, they might have reported or told them about what happened, and they get questioned by their friends and family, those that are there to support them. And going back to kind of the misconceptions and misunderstandings, I had a friend of a victim who actually told me that she thought that the incident was more of a sexual assault and not a rape. So to hear that, again, as a friend, I thought, well, what do you think is the difference? And they had no idea what the definition was.
We hear stories of men saying that they're afraid to go out and talk to women because they're afraid they're going to be accused of rape. Can we get into the definition of what consent is?
So the way they define consent in the Illinois statutes is it reads as consent means a freely given agreement to the act of sexual penetration or sexual conduct in question. Lack of verbal or physical resistance or submission by the victim resulting from the use of force or threat of force by the accused shall not constitute consent. The manner of dress of the victim at the time of the offense shall not constitute consent. Any person who initially consents to sexual penetration or sexual conduct is not deemed to have consented to any sexual penetration or sexual conduct that occurs after he or she withdraws consent during the course of that sexual penetration or sexual conduct.
So just to, you know, to answer the question and incorporate that, there needs to be an agreement to the affirmative that both parties are moving forward in a consensual manner. And, you know, to use the word consensual to define consent, it seems logical, but the reality is that both parties have to agree that they're moving forward and that they're going to have, you know, whatever conduct or relationship they're having. And I think that, you know, most of the time, you know, we hear from people that say, well, nothing was said, so yeah, good to go. Or, well, that person was passed out, so she never said no, or he never said no. Well, those, obviously that person can't consent.
So let's move on to a different issue, is the statute of limitations. Can we explain what the statute of limitations is and how that kind of plays out in a rape case?
The statute of limitations generally is the state legislature sets limitations on each crime where prosecution can be taken. In sexual cases, there have been several variations of the laws over, you know, the last two decades, from a very strict statute of limitations to, in some cases now, you know, children coming forward can, you know, cases can be taken up decades after they were ever sexually assaulted.
Delayed reporting is very common in these cases and therefore should never be an indication that something didn't happen, which we hear a lot. Well, if they waited, or how come they didn't report it? I find that delayed reporting reporting of this crime is very common. Some of the things that make it a little bit more difficult in the investigation when it is a delayed reported case to us is we lose a lot of physical evidence. So depending on how long the delay is, if it's months or years, sometimes even, we would lose that piece of physical evidence. So although it is very common, sometimes that makes the cases a little bit more difficult to investigate and therefore obviously then get to court.
What we tell folks is that's why that initial report is so important, and it's mm-hmm. extremely hard for a victim sometimes to come forward with that. You know, the process is not easy on the victim regardless of what happens, but we're able to get to a point very quickly where we can put the victim back in control of the situation. And if they need to take some time and deal with it, once we've preserved that initial evidence, once we've preserved everything we can, then the impact on the case is much less, and we can give them time and allow them to move through it at their pace and allow them to get back into decision-making position. And that's, you know, why from our standpoint, we attempt to get them to a point where we can look at them and say, okay, what do you want to do with this, and where do we need to go? And sometimes that is, I'm not ready to deal with this. And we respect that. And then we, you know, if that person comes back a year later, we're still in a good place to help them.
That initial evidence collection that you're talking about, I'm assuming you're talking about rape kits?
Rape kits, clothing, photographs, text messages, you name it. I mean, we live in a digital age. You and I can walk out of here, and I guarantee you by the time I could get to my car, I'm going to show up on a camera system somewhere. Frankly, if I can get to that evidence before that's rewritten, I can prove that I walked into this building today. If you wait a year, that probably isn't there. And it becomes very critical in our cases that we're able to look at that point in time and determine what evidence is available, and it's different in every case.
Illinois has a historically great backlog of rape kits. Can you give voice to how that presents an issue?
I would say with the backlog, it not only presents an issue for us working the case, but also presents an issue when we're trying to promote this safe space for the victims, that we want you to come forward and we're going to work these cases, and then they hear that it's going to take that long, that sometimes sends a message to them that their case might not be important, which is not the case at all. It's just, unfortunately, with the state of Illinois, it's not that they're not working them, it just doesn't, they don't have the resources to work the volume, I would say, that are coming in. So there's definitely a backlog, especially now with the changes where every sexual assault kit does go to the lab. So that's obviously increased.
And you might not have these numbers, but what does a wait list look like?
Well, I can tell you, you know, in this county, it's not uncommon for it to definitely take more than 6 months to get DNA evidence back. In the most, you know, in the horrible cases, it's taken over a year or longer.
Rape kits are very important evidence mm-hmm. when in the courtroom, and when there's not concrete evidence present, it's even more difficult when it comes to a rape case.
We've seen it before where that's what a jury expects, or that's what people expect. They expect there to be a DNA available, especially if there was a sexual assault kit done, but that's not always the case, and that doesn't mean that there was no sexual assault. So that misinformation is very unclear, I think, when that's, you know, expectation versus reality. It's the same thing with, you know, the crime scene. So if we go to the scene of where it happened and the crime scene's processed, if it's a case that was reported to us quickly, again, you might not have any physical evidence there. That doesn't necessarily mean that it didn't happen. It's just that sometimes there isn't any.
And this is definitely an area where, you know, TV really, for lack of a better term, handcuffs us. Detective Bruno touched on it. There are expectations that some jurors come in believing that I have a lab tech in the basement with ponytails like NCIS and that she can turn a DNA sample around to me in the next 5 minutes. And, you know, frankly, those people don't exist. I can't say that often enough. So the reality is until we get to that point where people understand that, you know, that evidence will not always be there, that we will have to rely on more traditional witness statements, video, maybe even, you know, new evidence, text messaging, GPS data, different things to prove our case, it does hinder that, because people believe that without that, that maybe this isn't true. And, you know, of course, they exercise that in the jury pools when they go back to vote.
Normal Police Lieutenant Paul Smith and Detective Nicole Bruno speaking with GLT's Mary Cullen. Last year, NPD announced Be the Change, a public awareness campaign aimed at ending sexual assault victim blaming by building strong, educated support systems.